Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the gang. You know, the one you never asked to be a part of. You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. This podcast has been created to tackle the tough but important conversations around grief with authenticity, realness, and having a laugh whilst we're at it. Look, we're all going to experience grief at some point in our life, in some way or another. So it's good to talk about it so that it's not much of a nightmare when it comes knocking at our doors. Grief can be incredibly lonely and isolating, but you don't have to feel lonely alone. On this podcast, you will hear various different stories and experiences, ones that will uplift you, inspire you, break your heart, mend your heart, and get you asking yourself some big questions. Some of these stories are my own, some are from the wonderful growing Grief Gang community, and some are from the incredible guest interviews. You will most likely cry. I hope somewhere along the line you can get a giggle in. But I promise you, you will learn something. I haven't got a clue what you'll take away, but I know you will take away something. So this might be weird to say given the context, but happy listening. Boy, oh boy, do I have an interesting episode for your ears today. I'm actually so excited to share this episode with you today, like, because it's been a topic that, like, it's been well sought after, but very, like, discreetly. Am I being a bit mysterious, don't you say? Today, Grief Gang, we are talking all things grief and sex. Have your shoulders just gone up and you've just gone, ooh, because you're not alone in that. And there's no shame in recoiling a little bit and just going a bit tense when you hear those two words together. Trust me, I did the same and probably will still continue at some point in my life. Anyhow, I received a month or two ago a lovely, lovely email that I do read out in this episode from a listener who needed some help within their sex life and grief. And it was so, as I read it, and as I say in this episode, it was so relatable and felt like I was just sat across the table with a girlfriend and she was just like offloading and just sharing. And I was like, I knew reading this email that, and I did know anyway, that this was a topic that so many people can relate to and will have their own experience, but maybe just don't know how to say it out loud that they are experiencing this. And so I thought, right, Amber, to task now. You need to do an episode on grief and sex. And I think to be honest, guys, by the end of this episode, it's not going to be the last. But I knew that I just didn't have the qualifications or more the nuanced experience and just to really do this episode justice. Therefore, I put a call out on Grief Gang for any recommendations for any professionals in the space. And I did a bit of my own research and through both my own research and in my own following and who I follow and engage with, I found Kate Moyle. And so Kate Moyle is a registered psychosexual and relationship therapist and a certified psychosexologist. And so when I found Kate, I was like, bingo. And so lovely as well, a lovely listener, Amy, who also knows Kate, recommended her too. And I was like, this is it. It's meant to be. It's meant to be Kate. And so in this episode today, Kate I've walked away from this recording my shoulders much more firmer down, and just I'd say like answers to questions, which we do. We're answering some of your questions today that you so kindly wrote in about your sexual well-being, your sexual health, your relationships towards sex, both with yourself and with your partners, and just opening that conversation. I really hope today that if anything from this, whether, you know, if you found answers or just, you know, curiosity answered, that it's maybe just got you thinking about your sexual relationship, not only with yourself and with a partner, and how I think the biggest thing here of how potentially, as Kate says very on early in the episode, of how when potentially the societal norms of what sex has been imposed on us, we're not meeting them, that we often look internally and go, well, something's wrong with me. But actually being able to welcome into the space of, but could this be actually something externally? And what can I do to help that, to change that, to accept that, whatever it may be? It's really, really fucking interesting. And so I hope you enjoy it. Kate is amazing. Kate is also the host of her amazing podcast that I'm going to pop in the show notes as well, and we speak about in there. And she also provides some recommendations throughout the episode of some books, some other podcasts too, to listen to for you to just get started talking about sex. Well, hello, Kate. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Grief Gang podcast. I'm so, so glad that we have got this in the diary, because this has been a very, very well sought after topic of interest with the Grief Gang community. How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here. I think it's a massive topic that we don't really hear being talked about ever, really. I think people feel it's so taboo.
Totally. And grief already feels like a taboo topic, is a taboo topic itself, and then throwing in sex too, it's just like people are really in between a rock and a hard place there. And it's just, as we're saying, of everyone has some sort of experience of this, however they portray it, but just nobody really wants to talk about it. It's so hard getting any people anyway to sit down with one another and talk about their grief, and then going, and how's your sex life as well? And going, oh my God, no, that's too fucking much. Like, that is too much for me right now. But before we get into what and why sparked this episode from my wonderful, wonderful community who just keep me always invigorated and on my toes, would you mind just telling the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do in your line of work, please?
So my name is Kate Moyle. I am a psychosexual and relationship therapist, also a psychosexologist, and I host a podcast called The Sexual Wellness Sessions. And really my job is that I'm a psychotherapist, a talking therapist who specializes in working with pretty much anything to do with sex. Mm-hmm. So it's a specialist branch of psychotherapy. And that's because it's really needed. And we do need this specific space to have these conversations, because they're so difficult for so many people to have. And it could be anything from grief and sex to sexual dysfunctions to sexual trauma, infertility, lack of desire, struggling with dating, sexual anxiety. Really, the list kind of can go on and on and on. it's any struggles that we have with sex and how those show up for us. And a big part of my job, I often describe, is helping people to work out what sex means to them and then how they build their relationship with sex. Because one of the biggest things is that we all kind of get given this definition of sex when we're probably too young really to think about it, and we never question it. Mm-hmm. And then when sex stops working for us, we think we're the problem rather than that everything else is the problem. And we have a pretty dysfunctional, not perfectly working sexual culture.
Yeah.
And that is why so many people struggle with sex.
Yeah, we have been fed this narrative of what we should believe to be true about sex. And then so when it doesn't go against our societal norm or construct of it, we go, well, something's wrong with me. And so much in the questions that we have received today are so reflective on, well, it's me, like something is wrong with me, and maybe not looking circumstantial. So I think today is going to be so brilliant. And I just know you're going to just dish out some words of wisdom, but just give clarity to people just to understand their relationship with sex. And kind of, I feel like this is going to be a real, like smashing through taboo kind of topics. People are going to be like, oh my God, we're really going through it today on this episode.
Well, I think that the biggest taboos we have are sex, money, and death.
Mm-hmm.
And they all are so interrelated. And there's such an intensity when you bring up any of those topics. Mm. And you can see people's body language changes
totally
when those subjects get introduced, or they change, they stop making eye contact, or they kind of change the subject. And it's such a fascinating dynamic because they're all things that we have to interact with in our lives in some way, but we just haven't quite caught up.
Yeah, figured out how we want to.
Yeah, exactly.
And before I get into the email that was sent, how in your career, in your length of career, how often are you seeing people who are bereaved coming to you for help within their sex lives and their relationship with sex?
It's definitely there a bit. And what I would say is that it might not be the reason that people come for psychosexual therapy or think that is playing a role in why they're there or why they've sought out therapy. But when we start working together, it might be apparent that actually a grief or a loss has played a bigger role than they thought.
Yeah.
And whether that's to do with the fact that we don't have these conversations, so people don't make those connections very obviously or very clearly, or that it's something very painful to recognize, or it feels like sex and grief shouldn't be attached to each other in any way.
Yeah.
And so if someone kind of admitted that to themselves, then they would feel like that was, I don't know, let's use the word that I hear lots of people say, like wrong, or how can these two areas of my life, which are so different, be connected?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it is definitely there. And I interviewed on my podcast, Julia Samuel, about this. And the conversation I had with her was absolutely fascinating because she was saying it's not something she doesn't shy away from.
Yeah. Oh, Julia doesn't shy away from anything.
No, she does not. And I loved hearing her perspective on sex, masturbating, dating, pleasure, orgasms, and how she'd come across it from the other side.
Yeah.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So I'm just going to read into the email that came from a lovely listener. I'm going to call her G. just for anonymity in case. But this is initially what sparked it off. Grief and sex being something that was always in the back of my head to talk about on the episode, but on the podcast. But I just thought, how to? It's so nuanced, and my experience and my story is only like 1%. So to really do it justice. So this lovely listener sent this in, and the way she's written it, I was just belly laughing. She went, "Hello, Amber. I hope you are well. I've been an avid listener of the podcast since I became a member of the Dead Mum Club back in March 2022. Your work has given me such joy, tears and laughter, and most importantly, the feeling of being seen. I cannot thank you enough. The loss of my mum has deeply affected me. I feel my life has been on pause ever since she passed, and my mind often lets me believe she is still just away on an extended holiday, or better yet, she's won the lottery. Faked her own death and will one day reappear beside me at a bar on a sunny island. A girl can dream. I've thrown myself into trying to understand the impact the grief has had on me, the symptoms both mentally and physically that we all experience. But there is one thing that has been impacted longer than I anticipated: my fucking sex life. Yes, I'm desperately trying to make sense as to why my body still isn't working the way it used to. I've been in a relationship with my boyfriend for 2.5 years, and he is extremely understanding and patient with me. He's been my rock, and our relationship is amazing. But with Marie having to be so dramatic as to die on me like that, we've had a rough 11 months of me being all over the place and sex being the last thing on my mind. Because, you know, all that fucking grief. But I'm now starting to become worried that I'll never be horny again. Lol, yes, I know. TMI. No, it's not. This is the reason I come to you, Amber. I need to know if other listeners have also found their grief to impact their sex life. And if so, how do I fix it? I need to know I'm not crazy or broken or hurling towards joining a convent. So much. I figure I'm in the depression stage of the stupid stages of grief, which, by the way, what a load of shite. Words out of my mouth. I'm hoping that soon I'll be feeling more like myself and my hormones will start working normally again. But after extensive research, I just want some answers. I was thinking this might be a good idea for a podcast episode." And she goes on and sends some lovely words. So that is what initially sparked this. And what an email, right? Like, I feel like she really kind of set the scene there. Yeah, that was from lovely G, who started off this conversation. And therefore, I asked the wider Grief Gang audience to share some questions. And they really came. They're very, very varied. Some with a bit more detail and for us to really get into. So we'll start off, because we want to try and get through as many as possible. So one of our first questions from the Grief Gang audience is, does grieving make people engage in unsafe or casual sex more frequently?
Oh, I feel like I've got so much to say. I think that first email, I just thought when I was listening to you say it, God, how relieved so many people must be to hear that. Because yeah. I'm not surprised by anything I've heard in that email. And I just think that it must be so normalizing for people to hear that they're not the only ones. I really was kind of like furiously nodding along with you as you were reading it out.
It was really, didn't that email really feel like you were sitting across it with your girlfriend?
Yeah.
Really just like sitting across. That's why I loved it so much. I really felt like I was sat with my friend. She's like, my fucking sex life. Mm-hmm. Like, what is wrong? What is going on? It really felt human and just like
very real.
A girl who's gone, I'm at odds here now. Like, please, someone help me. Mm-hmm. Like, I just need to figure it out. I think that's what it is. So thank you so much to G, and the way she wrote it was just phenomenal. Totally.
And also, you know, definitely not broken. Do not need to be signing up to go to a convent just yet either. So broken, I think broken is such a massive feeling that so many of us feel in our sex lives. And it goes back to where we started this conversation, which is, oh, the problem must be me, rather than that the problem is our sex around us, you know, the kind of umbrella of sex as it exists in our lives. And I think that broken, it's just a word I hear all the time. Am I broken? I must be broken. I feel broken. And you're not on the one thing that I would say that's going to relate to all of these conversations, and then I will answer the question you just asked, is that sex is in context. sex is not this existing on its own protected part of our lives. It is in mm-hmm. the context of everything that we do, feel, are, and it is going to be affected by all of those things. It's just that we've always treated it as something separate. And mm-hmm. we know that there is a bi-directional relationship between sex and the rest of our lives, because our mental health affects our sex, and our sex affects our mental health, and our physical health mm-hmm. has a role. So in all of the ways that I'll answer these questions, we'll talk about sex as something biopsychosocial. So biology, okay. psychology, and social kind of cultural environmental factors all influencing sex. And the kind of the casual sex question, I think it's completely person dependent, which is going to be the answer for all of these questions. I think for some people, when they experience loss, there is a sense of wanting just to push the fuck it button, and yeah. you experience a loss. And so what you want to feel is alive, and you want to feel that you are, you know, as far from death as possible, and pleasure mm-hmm. is one of the best ways, and being connected to other people is one of the ways that we most achieve this, the way we feel most alive. And I think mm-hmm. that there can be that side of it, which is I need to feel intensely here, and sex would be a good way for me to feel like I'm getting that. And the other thing can be sometimes a feeling like a lack of caring, which is perhaps sometimes where we're having sex in a way which is maybe less good for us, which is, you know, I don't care, I don't give a shit, I'm just going to do whatever I want, doesn't matter if I put myself in situations that might not necessarily be mm-hmm. good for me or are riskier. We take risks with ourselves, so things like our sexual health, you know, think about the contraceptive choices or partners yeah. that perhaps aren't good for us when we are afloat emotionally mm-hmm. or when we feel like we are not anchored or we are struggling. Yeah. And yeah. so there can be different reasons for why, but some people might experience a complete loss of interest of sex, a complete detachment from lots of things, sex being one mm-hmm. of many, and a detachment yeah. from other people, a sense of wanting to be on their own, you know, feeling isolated or like they want to be isolated. And other people mm-hmm. can go completely the other way. And aside from grief, how we have a relationship with sex is going to be something that plays into that. So for some people, Emily Nagoski talks about this in her book, Come As You Are, that 80 to 90% of people, when they're stressed, desire drops, interest in sex drops. But for 10 yeah. to 20% of people, their desire for sex increases. And so I think okay. we can think that there might be factors about how, what sex means mm-hmm. to us, or how we use it to cope or not, that might be also playing a part in that. When we're grieving, a lot of the time we can feel really numb. Mm. And so what that might mean is that we are having sex and feeling like we're not feeling anything, and that becomes almost a symptom of our numbness, or that we have sex to feel, to kind of show ourselves that we can still feel.
To feel something. Mm. Yeah. I think that's a really, yeah, that really quite speaks, just to feel something at all. You feel quite void of just feeling anything. Mm. Like you may not have cried at your bereavement yet, and maybe are thinking, why have I not shed a tear or expressed it in that way? So you may then start seeking casual, maybe unsafe, just to be like, can I feel anything, mm-hmm. like emotionally void of anything for this partner, whether it's in a committed relationship or casually, can I feel anything? So you make just explore and keep, and maybe what the detriments potentially could, that might be. It's really interesting.
In a way, kind of testing yourself.
Yeah. The fuck it button. It is. That fuck it button for me was definitely pushed quite a lot. Our next question. My partner died 10 months ago, and now all I can think about is having sex. I don't think I want a relationship now, as I'm still grieving, but casual sex seems so complicated and foreign to me. How do I navigate this?
That's such a big question, isn't it? And I think it's, I guess I'd be wondering about what our motivations for sex. So one of my favorite pieces of research found that there's 237 reasons for why people said they had sex. It was okay. A paper that showed that there were things like my favorite reason was to stay warm, but whether it's kind of mate guarding, so my partner won't go and have sex with someone else because I want to feel love, because I want to show love, because someone was attractive, because I wanted an orgasm, because I wanted to sleep better. All of these things could be. So we know that the reasons for sex don't have to just be because I want to have sex. And I wonder if for this person, what the motivation is it to feel connected to someone again? And I would just say there's nothing wrong with having casual sex, providing you do it carefully or in a way that looks after yourself. And I think that those things that we mentioned earlier, so things that we might not be thinking about kind of in the consciousness of our kind of awareness, but also if we have been in a long-term relationship with a partner, is contraception. So how do we make sure that we at least protect ourselves in terms of our sexual health? But how are we meeting people? If we are meeting people for the first time, maybe telling a friend or a family member that where we're going or who we're seeing, so that we have an accountability because we are more vulnerable when we are grieving. And I suppose the flip side of that is also, do we need someone else to get some of these things? You know, is this where solo pleasure and self-pleasure can really come into their own and help us to feel connected to ourselves and connected with pleasure and our own bodies? When we feel more ready to then invite someone else into that, that might be the next stage.
Because again, my mind's not even thinking of that, of solo, of welcoming that into the room first, and pleasuring yourself first. And really liked what you said there of kind of, from what I was reading of this, of kind of when they said, I don't think I want a relationship. And as you reeled off there, there's multiple reasons is that, she can acknowledge, or she or he can acknowledge, you know, that they don't want a relationship. So what is your motivator in this? Maybe it is you just want to keep warm. You just want to have that skin to skin contact and just have somebody being in the bed with you. So guess maybe like getting down what your motivators are, like what are your actual, what do you think your real whys are?
But also that is one of the things that people who, if they've experienced the loss of a partner, do really admit. The thing that I hear again, time and time again, is having someone in bed next to me. That's such it's not always about the sex, but just like the physical presence of a body next to me. And I think that a lot of people really feel that incredibly intensely. And I would so think talking to your friends or someone, you know, a trusted person who's close to you could help you to untangle some of this here, because you have been through, you know, a huge loss of your partner really recently. And it's okay, I think, to admit these things, but you might feel in some way that there is a timeline. You know, we're obsessed with timelines. When is a good time to move on? How long should I leave it? How long should my grief last? When is appropriate? And I think that having a conversation with someone who you love and loves you, who you can trust to have that conversation, would be probably really helpful here. And someone who also then can kind of keep an eye out for you, in order that you're, if you are going out and having sex with new partners, doing it in a way which means you're treading carefully in terms of your own emotional self-care. You're kind of looking after your own emotions, because there also might be, well, there is probably a risk when we're vulnerable of becoming more attached to people quickly. And those people might not be in the same headspace as us, particularly if, you know, we're using apps where people do, you know, casually dating and things like that.
That really reminded me, just thinking of, I don't know if you've read it or heard of it, there was this article by, I remember the surname, I think it was a lady called Aljar Pinto, and she was widowed. And she basically started documenting and recording after her husband died. She was having casual sex, and it was almost, it was very like Sex in the City, the way Carrie kind of blogged, and just she would refer to some sexual partners of just like bald man with like mole on his head, like just all these. She was documenting it, and the horror like from some people in her life, and then the real empowering of some people in her life was really interesting, and stuff like that. But she was keeping friends. This was kind of her way of keeping the friends who were like empowering or quite, you know, welcoming and forthcoming for her to explore this part of her life if she so wanted to. So I'd highly recommend that article. I'll probably pop it in the show notes.
Please send it to me as well. Really, I want to read it.
It was quite funny. It was, I think there was over 50 plus like encounters over like a 2-year span. But the difficulty of when with family and friends and their timelines projecting onto you of like, so for this person as well, that fear potentially of wanting to tell friends or family members, I want to explore potentially this area of my life. I miss this area of my life. And then projecting their own timelines onto you. That's the part, I think, especially with people who are widowed, have that real, I feel like definitely different for me, it being my mum died. If I was kind of like, I don't know, wanted to say to my friends, I really want to explore. I want to get back kind of in the game again or whatever. But someone who's widowed, they might come with a bit of a frown and people are like, And I think it's like the difference there.
And I think you mentioned something there, which we haven't mentioned, which is the stage of life that you're at. And actually Julia and I did an Instagram live last week and this came up. She was saying how she has been having conversations a lot with people who are widowed later in life and who are having to date using apps and things like that in a way that they never had to before or when they started their dating relationships, and how they're experiencing ghosting and how ghosting is, a rejection and almost a mini loss. So we're already in this loss space, in this grieving space, and then we're being ghosted and that can compound how we're already feeling. But also I think that our priorities might be different depending on what stage we're at. If we've lost a partner young and we were hoping to have children or have a family, we might be thinking, particularly if we are a woman or someone assigned female at birth and we want to have children, we're thinking, okay, my time is precious here. So if I've lost one part of my life, but I don't want to lose another part, what does that look like? Whereas people who are postmenopausal or have had their children or are in a different stage of their life, their priorities also might be different. And I think there's huge amounts of pressure that come with every stage.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting of that. Yeah, because I've no idea how old this person is who wrote in of applying that for some, that feeling of that biological clock ticking of like, okay, my partner has died, but I still want this part of my life, and kind of those conflicting feelings potentially of, I want this, but maybe I'm not feeling ready to potentially open up to, if I want to go down a traditional route of finding a partner and starting a family that way, or looking at more different ways of, potentially IVF on their own, whatever it may be, adoption. So it's all the afterthoughts and the after losses.
Because it's a loss.
Different layers. You think,
it's a loss of a potential. Yeah. That's what loss so much is of, isn't it? It's a loss of the future, a loss of potential. And I think that the kind of middle stage, I suppose, between those two life stages is people with children or young children. How are we able to be sexual and date with our children in the house?
Yeah,
because that can be a difficult, if we're a single parent, we can't stay out all night, or we can't bring people back to our house because that would be in some way risky. So there are also a lot of life context, physical barriers to having sex a lot of the time.
Our next one. What a topic. As a woman who's always found sex painful, where can I get help? Are there any qualifications you should look for in a sex therapist? I'd never thought it might be connected to my grief until this, but I can imagine it plays a part. So that this is the question I was thinking of that tied really well with this, and thinking, well, I didn't think it was that, but potentially, and just being open to that as well. So yeah, is there any specific qualifications this person should look for?
Yes, so in the UK there is a directory on the website, which is COSRT, so the College of Sexual and Relationship Therapists. So there's a directory of therapists who are specifically sexual, psychosexual and relationship qualified. I would say a psychosexual therapist is where you need to be if sex is painful, because it will just give you the space to talk about all of that with someone who's entirely comfortable having those conversations. And the reasons that sex might be painful are numerous. And so if, for example, you are someone who has a condition called vaginismus, which is an involuntary tightening of the muscles around the vagina, which makes penetration painful. So it could be penetration, not just sex, but tampon use, fingers, sex toys, smear tests. we know that this is what we describe as primarily a psychosomatic condition. And so if we are feeling tense, anxious, scared, we tense up, which is a natural bodily reaction. And this can make it worse. And this can become a cycle as penetration is then more painful. And then we anticipate pain more because it was painful last time. And so then we tense in anticipation of the pain. And so we know that this cycle continues. So that's an example. There are lots of other reasons that sex might be painful. Mm. Endometriosis being one, vulvodynia, whether it's to do with having had infections, people with repeated UTI infections are someone, a group that I see a lot, pelvic floor dysfunction. But I think that we can understand that this is all interrelated. One might not have caused the other, but for me as a therapist, I often talk to my clients about how we're looking for layers rather than one big answer for why.
The big pinpoint,
We're looking for the kind of different things in your life which might be contributing to where you're at. But I would definitely say for this person, then someone with a specific psychosexual therapy training would probably be really helpful.
Be best to start with. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Haven't had sex since my dad died 4 years ago, as grief made me feel so horrible. What can I do to feel better about my body and sex in general?
That's a massive question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I guess I was...
Because in that one, it's throwing in body. Well, it's all related, isn't it? Again, it's all, body too.
Yeah, and I guess I was thinking, you know, if we took the grief part out of that question, I think it's a question that a lot of people have. And feeling horrible, I don't know, that feels really visceral, doesn't it? That phrase feels really strong. I think that one of the things is about us getting comfortable with our bodies. And I don't know what it is for this person that's making them feel specifically horrible, but it's that how we see ourselves, how we feel about ourselves is body image, sexual self-confidence, whether we go for a kind of body positive approach or a body neutral approach, it's how we feel about ourselves is the key to then how we feel about ourselves in front of somebody else. And so I'd say to this person, it's about connecting with yourself physically and not necessarily sexually first, but just building a sensual relationship with yourself again. So there are some really amazing kind of basic mindfulness exercises which can help you to kind of get into your body, because when we're in our head and our thoughts, we're distracted, we're preoccupied, we're not feeling physically as much because our brain is driving our attention to what's going on in our heads. And so I think learning how to just even build a sensual relationship with self, which might just be something like touching kind of all over your body or moisturizing all over your body when you get out of the shower, just giving yourself 10 minutes and just noticing how your body feels. These are really basic things, or just lying with your hands on yourself for even a couple of minutes a day. Because also when we don't have sex for a while, or we're avoiding sex or anything to do with it, we back away from anything that might potentially lead to it. And so we kind of pull away from anything really to do with sex. And so that can then feel like such a bigger bridge to cross rather than if something's been more recent. And I often say that it's the time it hasn't been almost becomes the kind of primary problem in itself, rather than the fact that we haven't been having sex. It's actually that the time we haven't had sex for becomes the bigger problem than the fact we haven't had it.
Okay.
For us, that's how we feel about it.
But
I would say there's so many amazing podcasts, experts talking about sex. This is not me just plugging my own podcast, but have interviewed lots of people who I think are amazing voices in the space. But listening to podcasts of someone like Dr. Karen Gurney, she's on Instagram as the sex doctor. She's the biggest kind of leading voice in desire. Emily Nagoski is brilliant. She wrote literally the kind of cult book, Come As You Are. But starting to listen to what people are saying, because you can listen to different perspectives and ideas about sex without having to do anything, and taking away that pressure to do anything can help you to start thinking about things differently and start you to take kind of control over it again.
And just on that, of learning the language of kind of just, you know, you don't have to go jump into, right into the deep end first and potentially start with the big things first. As you said, like that big bridge, like this bridge is getting a bit bigger now. Like, okay, where to even begin to start putting one step in front of the other to get over it.
I'd say that's a better way to do things, actually, is break things down into small, manageable baby steps. Because also what we do is we build up more sustainable changes for ourselves, but our brain becomes responsive to anything to do with sex, and we have that anxiety reaction. And so then avoiding is how we best manage anxiety, whereas we have to slowly approach the source of our anxiety to become comfortable with it again, and for us to also learn, and for our brain to learn that what we thought was scary and threatening isn't actually so scary.
Yeah, and to teach it. And if, like, if you do end up back in this scenario again, in this state of mind of knowing that we put the steps and the necessary steps in place, implemented them, to know that we will get through this and we'll get over this bridge, and there'll probably be more bridges for us to overcross here. But yeah, definitely starting out with some of those resources, just to, I think as well, just to even as well, potentially this person, just hear people talking about it, just to hear people actually actively talking about it, because maybe this person, you know, they've written him, it's probably the first time they're potentially expressing it. So actually getting comfortable with hearing people talking about their sexual well-being and embarking on that. And so just getting comfortable with it and starting, and there's a journey ahead, but that you will do.
And that the overwhelm, the kind of overarching theme of sex anyway, is it's uncomfortable to talk about. So that's kind of there as the foundation, as the basic. And so remembering that also you're kind of already in that context, just as a person existing in the world. And so that is a really common feeling. I think that sometimes we forget that is the kind of general sense when it comes to sex.
And not alone in kind of the high shoulders and the, oh, okay, like, not everyone's listening in and going, like, everyone might be like, oh, yeah, okay, getting to grips with this, like, it's a journey, but it might hopefully help. And trying different things, maybe reading or podcasting or workshops, maybe you'll find your method of what really speaks to you and comes through to you, I find, okay, I'm going to do these last two. One of them I really want to, because when it came in, I went, oh my God, that's me. And you're definitely speaking to my inner, like, dark secret. I was like, fuck. But I'll leave that till last. Okay, second to last one. How the hell do you cope with the feelings that your body is shriveling up without the loving touch and deeply satisfying sex you enjoyed with your now dead husband? Having no one want you is hard to face, especially as you are getting older. Feeling like no one would ever want me again. This really tugged on my heart.
Yeah, I think there's so much in that. And again, one of the big things I think we have there is an underlying societal message, which is that particularly women, as they get older, are less desirable. And that's something that we see the menopause community are really pushing back against and doing amazing work on. And I think something that we are changing. And it's, for a start, it's just, you know, most of us know that it's not true. I look at so many kind of older women with such awe and amazement. And but I think that we do have, there's such an ingrained message, which is that youth is desirable. And, you know, whether we're talking about grief or not, is a huge part of that it's further away from death? I don't know. But I think that those messages are strong. And I think that for this instance, I think it's probably a way a lot of people feel. And it goes back to that first point we said about often relationships with others are the things that make us feel alive. And love is something that makes us feel alive. And if it's not specifically about sex, I'd say it's about finding love in other ways. So spending time with the people that love you, friends, family, those connections, and seeing if you can get something from a hug, a platonic hug or a connection with someone, and then also building on that relationship with yourself. So that central sexual relationship with self, in order to kind of make you feel like there is something there, which you can then, when you feel ready to, if you feel ready to, invite someone else into. And I think that we can, that kind of power of human connection can come in a platonic form, and the power of a hug, and also those neurochemical releases that we get from touch, so oxytocin boost from a hug. And we forget that those things can have, not, it might not feel like such an intense experience, or that we won't feel the strength of that bond in the same way, but they can offer us a little something.
Yeah, it is something. And kind of, if it's, yeah, I think it was actually Julia that said, I read somewhere, she might put a video up of, is it something like hugging for about 20 seconds does something, it's a specific timing, it was something. And I read that and I thought, it's so simple but so effective, and kind of how we may disregard, because it's just not like an elaborate, it's not an elaborate maybe act of love, an act of care, and kind of, but that, I think that's what's so great about it sometimes, is that it doesn't have to be
big.
Sexual and have a big build up towards having this big sexual moment, anything like that. Can just be hugging your friend,
and that
can give you that connection that you knew you needed, but you didn't maybe know you could have experienced it in that form, platonically.
It's why a lot of people describe having pets as very therapeutic a lot of the time, because although it's not a person, it is a living creature, and that there is quite a reciprocal relationship in that, in a way. And I know that sounds really strange, and it's in no way saying that that's the kind of best route to dealing with these feelings, but it is just something that I've noticed that people describe, is how there is also a living, you know, if it's a dog, for example, a living for someone else, or getting into a routine because of another thing that you care for. But I think that also just sharing how you're feeling again with someone who's close to you can allow you to feel heard, because when we're feeling that way, if we keep it to ourselves and we internalize it, we do tell ourselves that we're undesirable or unattractive or never going to find love again or never going to have sex again, because there's no external input. There's no one questioning those things.
Yeah.
And I think probably if you spoke to someone who loves you and you love, they would tell you something different or offer you a different perspective. Mm-hmm. But when it's us on our continual self-talk loop, we just take ourselves down the spiral. We don't ever say, actually, do you know what? Maybe I could be wrong, or maybe there might be another way, because we are, well, if we're grieving, we're struggling and we're suffering quite a lot, but also that's the way that we as humans work. We're self-critical.
And especially within grief, they're obviously of that inner critic, and that inner, like, I feel like I said, we sometimes are our own worst critiques, obviously. And especially in grief there, and this person's situation of being bereaved by after the husband died, of after, when you bereave, sometimes you feel like you're really not worthy of joy too, and joyful experiences. So then throwing in, well, no, like, no, I don't deserve to be desired or anybody to look at me because my husband has died and they're not here, or I should be this depiction of what a widow looks like. I shouldn't even be thinking about wanting to be desired. And that, I definitely struggled with that, of just that feeling of not deserving to have happiness and to have joy and to have pleasure, and just to go, you need to live in a perpetuate state of shit because your mum is not here. She is dead and she doesn't get to live. So why do you? And that was the cycle for me for a long time.
I think our brains went to the same place there, because I was just thinking about this idea of survivor's guilt, and how we know that Esther Perel talks about this, how her parents were Holocaust survivors. And she talks about how in their community, they saw the people that survived and the people that lived, and how those two kind of groups of people, their approaches to life were different.
Yeah.
And I think I've always thought of it as a really kind of beautiful, a really beautiful way of describing that. But I think that there is that element of that, which is also, I didn't think my life was going to look like this, and I didn't ever plan on having to be desirable to anyone else again or dating again, or just also the how do I do this?
Yeah.
And a lot of that, what you just described, is all built up in guilt and shame. And shame is a really silencing emotion. Mm. You know, guilt, we feel bad for something we've done. Shame, I feel bad for people, how people see me. And we know that shame thrives in silence, and that's mm-hmm. very, very linked to sex.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that's got me thinking. I'll be thinking about this for the rest of the afternoon. And the last one that I'm showing my arse with by saying, yes, absolutely, I agree and have been there. Thinking about a loved one during sexual acts, but not in a sexual way. Mind just wandering to them into the abyss. Mm. Help. And I was like, oh my God. Because I was like, I've never unearthed this. When I saw it, I was like, oh no. Because in them, not so much for me sort of now, but in those very early, because just all encompassed by it, I would be being sexual with my partner and just in the pocket, I'd just be like, oh, my mum died. And then I was like, whoa, back in the room, girl. Like, you, is this where we're at right now? So is this, do you know what I'm going to say? Is this a normal thing to experience?
I think normalizing it is going to be a big part of this. Our mind wanders all the time. And when we're in, you know, particularly like thick, you know, in the thick of grief and loss, that person's on our mind all the time. Everything reminds us of them. You know, we can find evidence for them and our connection to them anywhere from anything. Mm. And our minds wandering in sex is a very common thing as well. And I think that there's probably an element of normalizing this, which is just that it's not really a surprise if they're on your mind all the time, just because you're doing something different, whether it's supermarket shopping or having sex, that it's not really a surprise that they might sneak in. I think the thing to be cautious of, if this does happen to you, is not making it such a massive deal, as in isn't guilting yourself for having had that thought, isn't shaming yourself for having that thought, because what that will do is then if it happens again, you will have a more intense emotional reaction to it. And I think this is where the helping ourselves to be less distracted in sex techniques, so things like mindfulness sex techniques, focusing on the senses and what's happening in our body, trying to allow the thoughts to kind of come and go without judgment and self-criticism. That is one of the biggest factors here, is they're going to be helpful, but also I think just allowing yourself to just kind of know that your mind is going to wander, and that this person is, your loss is so present in your mind and impacting everything, and sex is in the middle of your everything.
Yeah. And it's almost like of how when you said there, like we're in the supermarket or you're doing whatever it may be, like I would never berate myself for, especially in meditation, I've tried it and my mind would wander to my mum many a times and just wander to wherever it would be. Mm. But do I give myself as much as a hard time for thinking about her then? Absolutely not. Just only when I was in the bedroom, I thought, oh, again, what is wrong with me? Of just actually going, your mum's just died, babe. And like, it's in every minute and window of your life. So yes, when you're having sex and you're enjoying it, don't be, and I think that's definitely not give yourself such a hard time. Mm. I think I absolutely gave myself, I thought, is this something to do with my relationship? Am I wrong? Am I just like, what the fuck? Why is my mum popping into my head when I'm having sex? And really stewing over it after, and actually just to go, it's okay. Like, and to not put such a heaviness on it, because I knew it would pass. It wasn't on the whole duration, but it would pass, and it passed through, and it'd be whatnot, and that'd be done. But I would fixate on that quick 2 seconds while she came into my head. What is that about?
Yeah. And that stewing on it is going to make it a stronger connection. And what you're going to also do is then go into future sexual experiences thinking, please don't come into my thoughts. Please don't come into my thoughts.
Yeah.
What you're doing is you're then putting that person kind of inviting, pretty up in front in your consciousness. Yeah, exactly. You're basically, you're kind of almost guaranteeing that they're more likely to be there. And then if that does happen, then you'll give yourself a hard time. And then the cycle begins. You're likely to do things like try and avoid sex at that point because you don't want that person to be there. And that's going to have a negative effect. And sex might be something that you're really enjoying. And I think try and just, as you said, you wouldn't give yourself a hard time about any other time. It's just because there's a connection, because they're not a sexual for lots of people. Mm. You know, they're not a sexual person, or they were never part of your sex life, or so it's that natural human reaction of, ugh, sex. No, it's so uncomfortable. Mm. And we question so much more when it comes to sex than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kate, that's the end of the questions. I mean, I could feel like I could sit here and talk to you all day, but more so we can listen more to you and your wonderful, wonderful words. Where can the people find you and engage with your work?
So my podcast is The Sexual Wellness Sessions. Each episode is a deep dive into a particular topic of sex. So whether it's grief and sex, desire, erectile dysfunction, motherhood and sex, sexual trauma, et cetera, et cetera. And also what I would say is, if people do listen and feel like there's an episode that's missing, please reach out and tell me. I would love to know what you would like to hear. And my website is just my name, which is katemoyle.co.uk, and my Instagram is at katemoyletherapy.
Well, Kate, thank you so, so much for joining us here today in the Grief Gang podcast. I know, and for me as well, it's definitely helped and definitely broke down some taboos that I didn't think I maybe thought I was struggling with, especially that last one. So really, thank you so, so much. Thanks for tuning in this week. I truly appreciate every single person who listens to the show. By doing so, you're actually helping more people find the show and in turn support themselves. You can keep up to date and become part of the Grief Gang community by following us on social media platforms such as Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Check out our website and blog too, and if you fancy, you can sign up to our newsletter, where you will receive regular emails and first to knows on events and workshops. All links for the above are in the episode footnotes. Big love, look after yourself, and I will see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.